Welcome to Weekly Wings, your go-to podcast from DroneLife.com, where we soar through the latest in drone technology, regulation updates, and exciting innovations. Each week, join Samuel, Terry, and I as we navigate the drone industry, offering expert insights, interviews with key figures, and a bird's-eye view of how drones are shaping our world. From commercial applications to recreational adventures, Weekly Wings delves deep into how these remarkable vehicles are impacting construction, education, filmmaking, delivery services, and much more. Whether you're a professional drone operator, a hobbyist, or just drone curious, tune in to stay informed and inspired as we explore the heights of what's possible in the world of drones. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of Weekly Wings, where the future is looking up. Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of Weekly Wings. Happy Memorial Day. Thank you to all those who served, and especially to those who gave their lives fighting for our great country. Happy Memorial Day. How you doing, Terry Samuel?
I'm doing great, and I like that that intro we have going on. Bird's eye view of all the news and all that. That's pretty nice. But yeah, I'm doing great. Terry, how are you doing? You said you're doing good?
Just fine. Yeah. Happy Memorial Day, everyone. Thank you for your service. Sorry.
I think we have some fun topics.
Yeah,
today.
We got a great episode.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, great episode today. A lot of really interesting stuff. The theme of drone light shows just continues to make its way into the news again this week. We'll be talking about the FAA Reauthorization Act. We'll be taking a look at the world's fastest camera drone, putting it right up against a Formula One fastest man in Formula One, Max Verstappen. Talking about Port San Antonio and some eVTOL drones, what's happening there. And from a regulatory perspective, we have a story right here coming out of the great state of North Carolina. So those are the cool things we will be discussing in this week's episode. The FAA Reauthorization Act. Terry, what can you tell us, general kind of summary here? What sticks out at you with the FAA Reauthorization Act, and how is that maybe going to lead to developments?
Well, the biggest thing I've seen was giving a time frame for the FAA to give us a rule set for the BV loss. I think it's, you said 5 to 13 months, so they got to make a rule set by, or a proposition by the 5th month, and then make it final by the 13th month. As we all know, the FAA are not the fastest human beings on the planet, not like Max Verstappen by any means. So this is really big to push development forward for the drone community.
Yeah, BV loss, beyond visual line of sight. Drones have made such a huge impact across the country, across the world, even just being operated within visual line of sight, a lot of manual piloting, real estate, information, data, construction, marketing, just police, public safety, the ability to quickly deploy a drone, and then maintaining that visual on a site from a compliancy standpoint, and it's safe, right? How do you make sure that that drone isn't impacting manned aviation, helicopters, fixed wing aircraft, you know, those other aircraft that can't necessarily see the drone, but also the 5 and the 13. I don't know where you got those numbers from.
Sorry,
I think four,
sorry.
Right? 16 months
is the
So
4 months is the cutoff.
Yeah, 4 months. So from the reauthorization, there will be 4 months in order to propose a BV loss proposed rulemaking, and then 16 months from that date would be the timeline in order to get these new proposed rules into effect for operators across the U.S. So a potential 20-month timeline, which I think, Terry, you mentioned is even seems fast in the speed of the FAA. What are you seeing, Samuel? Your thoughts, FAA Reauthorization Act?
Well, I just kind of wanted to put it into perspective, too, for like civilian people that are not familiar with drones or even new drone beginners, like what BV loss means for them. Because as someone who has flown over years now, I initially, you know, beyond visual line of sight, kind of iffy. But now that I've been in the industry, the field, and I understand the capability of the technology we're using and how safe it can actually be and how close we actually are for it to being a reality, I'm a believer in it, you know? And I just kind of wanted to shine a little light on the, like, why that is specifically for some of those new people that might be being introduced to this. Like, why should it be that way, you know? But I think it's just because we've proven that it can kind of be done, you know, with, I don't want to hog the floor with this conversation, but being able to see like, hey, you know, we have all of the telemetry coming in. We're seeing that from all of the instruments that are being used, we're seeing great stuff coming back. Why specifically do we need eyes on? Yeah, there's a good reason for it to have eyes on, but if we're doing it safely and pushing forward kind of that technology, I don't know. I think that's kind of a good thing that we're seeing coming out of this.
Yeah, and a huge, right? It also gives the FAA the funding that it needs in order to just continue all operations over the next 5 years. $105 billion, right, was voted on. And then it's just waiting to be signed by the president. So the rulemaking, I think two additional test sites. So some of the other, we've got here the article pulled up, dronelife.com. Some of the other key elements of the reauthorization is the additional test sites for companies to leverage for what seems to be, you know, package delivery testing and then other kind of advanced UAS operations. Extending the Beyond program, which centers around developing standards, engaging communities, and informing policies. So the Beyond program has, you know, helped advance operations on the package delivery side, but then also from a security and inspection standpoint, longer range operations, less operations in less risk, environments of less risk. And then providing the authority to expedite approvals for, again, lower risk beyond visual line of sight operations. Think pipeline inspections, remote areas, areas where even if the drone were to, say, fail, because that's the probably one of the most important things we have to think about is if this drone were to completely fail, what would happen? Is it going to be putting people at risk? Is it going to be putting property at risk? Or is this going to be happening in the middle of nowhere in a region where humans just don't go?
Completely empty areas, so, essentially.
And then also empty, yeah, and low population density and shielded operations. So within 100 feet of the ground, right, being able to keep that drone, I think we've talked about previously, in environments where, again, there's lower risk that that drone is going to be coming into contact with a helicopter, fixed wing airplane, or, you know, any other aircraft in flight.
Honestly, it seems kind of revolutionary to see this going to be put in place and practiced. Kind of just, I'm assuming this is like the proving ground per se to say, hey, this is what we can do with this and let's see how well it works.
In the DFR, right, Brink is unveiled a responder drone with a box for DFR. We discussed last week the hearing, the congressional hearing, which, you know, was really neat to hear. And of course, country of origin came up, security came up. What's the biggest challenge for DFR? It's not the technology, it's the regulatory aspect. So a lot of folks on the public safety side just sat in Washington at the end of last week and testified saying, hey, DFR, drone as a first responder, is really helping departments. It's helping the communities. It's advancing public safety. But there's huge regulatory challenges when it comes to real value-added DFR, where you got the drone in the box, 24/7, remote deploying it. Because if you can't send that beyond the visual line of sight of the remote pilot or even a visual observer, then how is it going to get to the site in 90 seconds unless everybody's perfectly positioned? So it's I don't know if it's interesting or strategic, you know, in the sense of, hey, here's everybody talking about DFR. You've got these companies coming out with these DFR drone in a box solutions. The costs are getting lower. And at the same time, here's 4 months. You need to come up with a proposed set of rules. And then, hey, within 16 months after that, we need to get these rules into effect.
I'm just kind of curious. Have you by chance actually gotten to see drone in the box for practical uses? Like, I don't know if you've seen anyone use it in the field and seen it. I don't know. I'm just kind of curious if that's kind of starting to be integrated in an actual aspect.
So there 100% outside of public safety, there's multiple companies, Nightingale out of California, they've got a drone in a box. And they were actually mentioned, the company came up during the congressional hearing. I think New York City is either using or has used or has tested their product. I know they have a product in operation here in North Carolina. You've got, in addition to that, at the like a 10 federal storage location in Raleigh, there's the Hive or the, I can't remember why the, just can't remember that company right now, but they have a drone in a box solution that's more tailored to security versus public safety. So there's just like Asselon. We talked about Asselon and I think the first episode, right? They've designed and developed a drone in a box that's, you know, there for a security purpose, but it's not a first responder. So it's never going to leave its the confines of the property you own. So that's the other thing. Having a drone in a box that's readily deployable beyond visual line of sight, it doesn't always mean it's going to go save somebody's life, right? Businesses want a drone in a box just to fly around their construction site, a really small footprint, and they don't ever want the drone to leave that footprint. So there's companies that are trying to tackle, again, all these various use cases, because just like you have a truck and a fire department uses a truck to tow their boat for their life-saving operations, that same truck is on a construction site and it's being used to haul materials. So same exact vehicle being integrated into two totally different operations. And that's exactly what drones could be compared to.
I'm just kind of curious. I mean, from my understanding of how that would work is like me, if I had those automated flights going, so I set it for 2 p.m., it takes off from its drone in the box area with its wireless charging in the box. This is me just speculating from what I know, but takes off, does an automated flight, everything it needs to do, come back after 10 minutes and it lands again. Me as the operator, I would have to be engaged with that mission, right? I mean, I'd have to sit there and make sure that, okay, you know, it's 2 p.m. It's about to, let's go make sure everything's good. Prior to that flight, I needed to do my pre-flight and then my post-flight afterwards, because it's automated, right? But you still have to be somewhat involved. I don't know, just from your understanding of how that mission would, what what do you think that would look like?
The drones are ready just like that. It's like a Google Calendar. You can schedule it. You could say every Monday. You could say every other Monday. You could say the first Monday of the month. You can say the time. So that technology is 100% ready to go. It's available. It's, you know, a couple tens thousands dollars, right? And the to actually capture that value of deploying on a scheduled basis, you've got to integrate your DAA, right? Your detect and avoid. So your ground-based radar, those autonomous systems that can do what the operator would be doing. And when you are, so taking the human out of the loop from a construction standpoint, because then yes. So a construction company might want that drone in a box to go off at the same time every day, and they have the technology in place for detect and avoid, so a human doesn't actually have to be in the loop. And it's in a very confined space, right? Same time, it becomes very scheduled, with the ability to tap into that drone at any time and manually fly it. So with DFR, it's larger area, and the calls are going to go to very unknown locations. So automating that fully becomes very difficult unless you have a sensor that goes off, a gunshot sensor that it can detect the location of, or an actual camera. Otherwise, you know, you call 911, a human answers, and then they're dispatching something to that address or that location. So you need the system where that dispatcher can then just quickly say, boom, 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 the location, and then the drone goes right to the location. And from the moment you deploy it with the known location, it's all hands off. But then once you get there, the drone doesn't have the brain to be able to, you know, look around the way an officer or an EMT normally would. Where's the victim? Wait, let me. Drones don't have that. They can go fly A, B, and avoid things on the way. But now once I get there, what the heck am I looking for? So that's where you circle and you start to hover, right? Just stay in point. But at that point, you can then manually jump in and take control and kind of operate it. So there's, I don't even want to call it levels. I don't know how to describe.
I mean, I would say you're definitely maximizing your time and like your usage, because I mean, if you had like, hey, I'm going to be at the site in 5 minutes, you fill out other stuff that needs to be filled out while you're doing, I don't know. It seems very efficient, you know, or be there in 5 minutes or ping you. Well, then you take over.
Yeah. And the other thing, it's like, to have this thing from a construction standpoint or from a consistency standpoint where you don't have to worry about charging the batteries, bringing it with you, forgetting something. It's taking off from the same point, the same location every time. The dock has RTK built into it. So your accuracy. So there's a lot of reasons to just start integrating these docks, even without that full automation and beyond visual line of sight. Because a lot of it still, I was just saying, it's like a book. You know, when you get the book and you open it and it's like, all right, if you answer this, then go to this page. But if you answer this, go to that page. So everyone's trying to, in a sense, do the same thing. But it's like there's 15 different paths.
Lots of ways to
get to these 28 different outcomes. Yeah, it's crazy. And then as everything with the drone industry, people, new products keep coming out. So it's only gets more exciting as the technology continues to keep pace with and just stay ahead of the regulations. And then hopefully this will be bringing in the eVTOLs, paving the way for the electric you know, pilotless air taxis with the rulemaking that gets in place. Cause that's the other thing. Yeah. The rules are going to come up, but then it's like, all right, well now let's see for the next 4 months, what conversations take place and what ideas are thrown out there and then what's proposed. And then from what's proposed over the next 16 months, what gets accepted. So really neat to know that we're moving forward, but there's going to be so much, work done and conversation and agreement and maybe disagreement, but hopefully it's paving the way for that future that, that we're all, you know, hoping to see that leads to, you know, more successful integration and more clarity.
Have you had,
what can be done and how to do it?
I don't know if you have been fortunate enough to see a pilotless air taxi. I know Miriam said she saw one, I believe. I could be wrong. First episode, but I didn't know if anyone specifically, Paul, I don't think you, Terry, have seen a pilotless air taxi in person, have you? I have not.
I haven't. I think I've seen a photo of Paul next to one, actually.
There's one. There's the Ehang, which made a lot of noise and like 2020, 2021, Chinese company. But compared to the Jobys and the Archers and the Beta Flights, it's really not in the same bubble, but there is one. I did, you know, it you see them at the trade shows and stuff, so it's kind of neat. Get in it, take a photo. I've never seen one flying in person.
I want to see that specifically, you know, because I feel like I've seen, like, you know, what you're saying, the trade show vehicles and whatnot, but to see one in the air moving around, that sounds pretty awesome.
With people in it?
Oh.
It's going to have a few thousand test flights for me to hop on that bad boy, but I'm excited to see it happen.
And with that, so now we're kind of looking at the tech side of the conversation here in this episode of Weekly Wings. And what we've got, Terry, I'm going to share my screen here. Tell the folks, what are we talking about this week when it comes to some cool drone tech?
We've got the volume's down on low, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, make sure the volume's on low.
You think that can keep up with me around the lap?
And it's pretty low, right? We're not blasting anybody out.
It's all right. It's all right.
I think that can be.
What are we looking at, Terry? What are we talking about this week?
So we have a FPV drone that can keep up with a F1 car in simple terms. I think it reaches 190 miles per hour at its top speed. I could be wrong about that. 350 kilometers per hour, so I don't know what that translates to.
All right, let's do this.
But it's just impressive that you can even keep up with an F1 car with anything, let alone, I mean, it's shaped like a torpedo, so I'm sure that helps, but
150, 180.
I don't know. I'm super excited. I don't even know how to formulate my words.
We're looking at it on the screen. 280 kilometers an hour, 313. I think straight line, it hit like 320 kilometers an hour.
And we're back. The team is looking down the barrel of a 455 meeting.
And so what we're seeing on the video here is FPV pilot.
You definitely did. There's a small issue.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I'll turn the volume off. Here we go. Yeah. So we got FPV pilot, right? Flying with some fat shark, got his radio master. But what they end up doing, and this is really cool, you can look it up. It's on the Red Bull YouTube channel, world's fastest camera drone versus an F1 car. The video is really neat because it goes through the whole how they built these, put them together. The first one they powered on, it just like shorted out or something, just completely.
It had too much power.
Fried the wire. So second one went up. From what the video is showing, you know, it's very entertaining. Seems like some overheating, but they continue to fly and they're just, you know, taping it up and trying to find the perfect performance, and they're getting this thing flying over 352 kilometers an hour.
Trying to look up like the 107 said, like,
190
max. Do you remember that?
What, 107?
Yeah, what is the 107 max speed? I think it's 120. 110 miles per hour.
Oh, Samuel.
I'm literally just seeing this thing go so fast. It's like they got waivers, right?
I don't know.
You know, 100 miles an hour. 100 miles per hour. 87 knots. So top part 107 operations in the U.S. But again, here, they're certainly not flying in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah, no, they're, I think... it's got to be in some European country.
And so they get it built out and everything. And, you know, you can't be bringing Max Verstappen. He's like, you know, this guy's, you know, busy winning races. So they get another Red Bull racer out to the track so they can do some testing. And like Terry mentioned, you could see on the screen the, you know, some C2 issues. They're just traveling at speeds that are, you know, from insane. A drone standpoint, just not common. And then the size of this racetrack is huge. So trying to balance all those variables.
Making it be able to turn quickly. It's
the videos. And the videos on here that you can see right now, if you're, you know, watching on YouTube, if you're listening on the podcast or audio only, the drone is just taking these corners and turns on this F1 track as smoothly as the F1 race car. It's keeping up with it. It's what they're saying. And they were saying in the video is you've never seen it like this before. And I just started watching F1 this year, this season. And they do not show it like this on the, it's very hard to really understand the speeds that these cars are traveling at. When you see these drone shots, it is insane. And then this clarity, 295 kilometers an hour on the screen. The video that plays back, it's beautiful.
And I think this is, if I'm not mistaken, I think Red Bull's like paying these guys to make these drones so in the future they can record for the TV for the viewers' experience.
That thing does look kind of sick,
Red
though.
Bull Drone 1. And so like Terry said, yeah, they just, look at that. They, just like the race car, you know, they're putting some money into this. And so they refined it. They created a Red Bull worthy product, and there is Max Verstappen suited up, jumping in the race car. And you've got it. So if you're listening on audio and you don't you're not seeing this, you got to look this up, because it ends up raining and they still film this. And the car, the color, the green, the water coming off the back of this car.
Jeez.
It's beautiful, right?
It's beautiful. This is in England, by the way. I looked it up just a second ago.
This is amazing.
I'd love to see that blown up on a big TV, essentially 4K TV. I bet that looks so good.
And like you're just to watch the race. Like if this was the race, that'd be a really cool angle.
That's a video game right there, to be honest.
I'm sure it's going to eventually get.
Look at all that construction right there that they're doing on that track.
I'm sure it's going to get to the point where we'll have a video feed. Kind of, I don't know, like the way they film drifting events nowadays, where they have the FPV drones. Obviously they're not going as fast, but they're filming them going around the corners, drifting. They'll eventually have that for F1, and keeping up with F1 cars is no easy feat. I mean, they're putting millions and millions of dollars into making these as fast as possible.
But right here, he gets ahead, makes the turn. Oh my goodness. Crispy, right? Okay. Right there. Wow. And then the other thing, too, as I was watching this, I was like, algorithms, AI, just build the hardware and then write software that can track the, it's just tracking software, but being able to have the speed and stability that an F1 car requires. You just write, just write. Then you don't need the helicopter, because the cost of, because that's right, they're using the helicopters, right, to track and give you some, but they don't have the same, it's certainly not bringing the same.
Yeah, it's not the same effect. It's not tailing the cars. I mean, could you imagine having an FPV drone going behind the final lap of the number one leader and just seeing like four car lengths behind him of just nobody, and then see the last dude? I don't know. It's just, it would be cinematic to have that angle for them to use for promotional anything. I don't know. I think it's,
and to get down into show in perspective, like how far that lead is, like when,
yeah,
you know, traditionally, if you look at these races, you know, one person is 7 seconds ahead finishing the race. So to have that drone down there in order to be able to sometimes see just of how far that gap is, as I was just, you know, super impressed. And folks need to, should go watch the video, because you see, again, these, they're, it reminded me, I had just recently watched the, they had this YouTube video from the jump, the ionosphere jump. I don't know if you've watched that one or not. It's like 30 or 45 minutes. And so they show how Red Bull basically created the system and the ability to live stream that guy jumping from the 115,000 feet in the air. Well, that was like one of the very first live streamed events on YouTube. And they had to figure out how to actually put the cameras on this capsule. And then once they figured out how to put the cameras on the capsule, then they started live streaming it. And they had never had a live stream with like over 1 million or 2 million viewers at the time. And there ended up being 7 million plus live viewers watching this person jump out of that capsule from 100+ thousand feet in the air in the name of Red Bull. And so they came up with all this tech. They built the whole thing and the fail safes and got all the approvals, and they overcame all these challenges. So when I was watching them build that, I was like, oh, they're gonna figure this out, because they're supporting Red Bull, and Red Bull's always supporting those who, you know, are willing to kind of push the limits, but do it in an extremely safe way. So really cool. And then again, they were doing it, you know, on just kind of like what looked like almost a, you know, to explain like a kitchen room table or a kitchen dining table. You know, it wasn't like in some big fancy place. So people always think innovation and technology and fast, it has to be coming from some well-developed, you know, space. And it's like, nope, some FPV folks built this up.
Going back to one of your points about automation, there is a very basic form of follow me for the DJI products, and I'm assuming some other drones as well. Like that's already, it's kind of already being put in place, isn't it?
Yeah. In the battlefield, so tracking, but being able to track things at low speeds, like, you know, a vehicle, your standard traditional vehicle, right, going 25, 35, 40 miles an hour, right? Even nowadays, tracking a vehicle going 60 is easily done. Tracking the F1 race car that's, you know, hitting 180 and then stopping on a dime and turning and then getting back up again manually, you can do that. Right. But I think it does go back to what we've talked about, is like a jet that's piloted by AI. So if you can have, you know, AI, we got that phone ringing in the background, AI, you know, making those types of movements and control manipulations and at very high speed, then it's certainly something that we could see programmed into the drone technology. it then comes down to how reliable is the hardware itself? Is the hardware capable of braking, slowing down, and then speeding up that quickly from an autonomous standpoint? But if you could manually do it the way he was, then there's no reason you couldn't potentially train, right? Your flight software code into, you know, a autonomous type of tracking. It's just never going to give you that smooth, right? Because you can do tracking in with your off-the-shelf drones, but when you get into the cinema world, they're always going to be like, well, we're manually flying because you can push the limits a little bit more. But I think, again, AI is challenging, you know.
I think it would be best to probably keep that manned, just for the pure fact that if that drone crashes and it couldn't take any avoidance to avoid that crash, and it lands on the track and one of those cars hits it and they're going 160 miles per hour, probably not going to be the best outcome for that driver. I don't know. I feel like keeping it manned would probably be the best option. I like AI, but not that much.
But we're definitely, yeah, I think, but in the future, you'll definitely have drones that go that speed. And the other thing is with the regulations at 100, I was thinking more of this is Pete, there's other folks who probably could have built this, and here in the States, they're like, oh, we've been doing that, but they can't post it on YouTube. And, you know, there's certain, there's, you know, it's being done, but to potentially see it be done at scale, to see it get integrated, because that video is 2 months old. So to potentially see this get into something else, and heck, Red Bull is doing fast things all across the world, not just with cars. So this drone could be something that they see being valuable to them in, I don't know, even air races or
more than one endeavor. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that,
if you have any crazy ideas, send it to Red Bull. They'll make it happen. Wildest dreams. My bad.
Yeah. Your wildest dreams done safely at a high rate. So speaking of manned, unmanned, Port San Antonio preparing for advanced air mobility. Port San Antonio plans construction of an eVTOL vertiport. What do we know about vertiports? Vertiport?
I'm sorry, I'm just a little enraptured by the concept art.
Personally.
By the concept art? Vertiport?
Yeah, I'm staring at this article, and just like AI. It looks next generation, essentially. And I suppose that is kind of what eVTOLs are. They're just that next form of transportation from relatively short distances to where you need to go, you know? Like, if you are in a hurry, like, you need to get from one major aspect of a city to the airport, you hop on an eVTOL. At least that's some of the examples I've seen. Especially with it located on the site of the former Kelly Air Force Base. That sounds pretty significant, too.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing how everybody wants new things, new buildings, commercial spaces, employees want to work in new buildings. People want to buy stuff and shop in new buildings, right? The mall is an old building. People don't want to go there, especially when the outside looks not new.
Hmm.
But also from a military standpoint, I think there's a lot of bases, installations that like had value during, you know, different times, and then things consolidated or moved somewhere else, and you're still left with communities and homes and people who own them. So for a military installation to just shut down and like pack up, it really would devastate a community, even a small base that's not growing, because all the home values and the commercial property values are attached to the fact that people are working at that installation. So by c- converting it to something else, it at least still helps the community be able to thrive. And something like a vertiport's really neat. $100 million for renovations should end up looking pretty new. And it seems like there's, you know, the port overall, the port itself, right, has a lot of employees. And so the ability, I don't know, for this vertiport to potentially become a new mode of transportation that
currently
is able to go
18,000 employees over the past 6 years. That's crazy.
And plans could call for another 12 to 18,000 in the next 7 to 10 years. So that congests a lot of transportation.
Hmm. Well, I think it's really kind of enlightening too, because it's initially built as a military installation. It was designed to be located at the end of the road and somewhat difficult to get to. Now becoming much more of a center of technology and talent integration, we need to make it easier to get to. That was one of the direct quotes, and I think that's kind of hitting the nail on the head there, because it's making it easier to get to and showcasing some of the greatest technology that we're making right now, in my opinion. Some really great technology, not quite the greatest, but I just think this is a really cool thing. So.
And so, Terry, you had mentioned that it's not, you know, it's for the, potentially this is actually for employees. And now I'm seeing here, as I've got pulled up, it looks like, you know, the initial goal is to serve as the transportation, mode of transportation for the port itself, carrying folks across this massive campus.
Yeah. I mean, you can take a raggedy bus or you can take a $1 million eVTOL to your burger spot on the campus.
That's what I was going to say. Is that how you're going to, get to the dining facility at work? He said the raggedy bus. I bet you it's a nice new electric bus. And some people are probably kind of upset about this.
I'm kind of curious too, though, is this going to be the start of a greater installation throughout the city of having vertiports and then just kind of like crisscrossing or even making its own system of going from port A to port B to port C to port D all the way back to port A and making a new center of connection that way? Because that, I don't know, I see a lot of potential with that, but the start of something, I should say.
Yeah, let's see. Port.
It's like a airport, from what I can tell. I don't know. I don't think that's like. It's not like a regular airport. It's for like FedEx and logistic companies to move around. I think.
Yeah.
Has stuff there.
So here we are in San Antonio. Here's the airfield. Kelly Air Force Base.
And it's going to be interesting how they deal with incoming traffic. I'm assuming they're going to have like corridors they follow to move along it. But that'll be interesting how they kind of deal with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think this too is just like, hey, you got to establish, there's kind of like, what is the horse and what is the cart? Like what, you know, we're building the vertiport, what aircraft are going to fly, exactly where they're going to fly to from this vertiport. You know, is there going to be another landing? It's so, but I think people getting ahead, I think knowing that the funding is there, there's some plan in progress, and
it's definitely a place to continue to be looking at as the industry continues to grow. And I mean, again, like, this section and this segment, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I feel like it was kind of the beginning of EV chargers. Like, you know, in the beginning, they weren't exactly sure what EV chargers were going to be looking like and where they should place them. What's the best, where's the best spot to place them? How do you optimize it? And now the more I hear about it, the more I see incredible places they can go where they can be partnered with businesses so that can attract certain, like, hey, I need to charge my car. Let me just park at the bookstore for a while and go read a book, come back. Hey, I'm good to go, you know, but I don't know, maybe poor example, but I can just see a lot of potential for the vertiports to evolutionize themselves throughout the next couple of years.
And to stand as the first, it's all like first mover. So once you can do this first, Port San Antonio, it could bring people in to see it and understand it and drive business from an awareness and just kind of put this area back on the map while everything continues to kind of figure itself out. But we want to take questions every week. We do want to try to field some questions from our listeners in the audience. So during this segment that we just did, hopefully you guys can comment, ask questions on the YouTube channel, or send an email to Miriam@dronelife.com, or you can email myself, Paul Rossi, Rossi, at 910drones.com. Moving on for our last couple segments of this week's episode, Memorial Day. Again, happy Memorial Day to everybody. Is drone light shows. Talking about drone light shows again. It's just crazy because at this point we should probably just turn this segment into the forecasting. What drone light show thing will happen next week, Terry? Like, but we even talked about this. So for anyone who wants to go back and check me on that, you know, I mentioned, I think, goodness, can't even remember the company's name off the top of my head right now. Pablo Air, they have drones, right, with pyrotechnics attached. Well, here we go. United States Sky Elements debuts pyrotechnic drone shows in the United States. So this was just published 2 days ago. 300 drones, marking a new era for drone light shows.
I would like to note, this is just such an American.
Firing pyro on drones in 3, 2.
But this is such an American thing to do. Cutting edge technology mixed with explosives.
It's kind of sick,
though. Forming a bald eagle in red, white, and blue in the sky. No, it's amazing.
It looks so cool.
And to think we were talking about this like 2 weeks ago, like, when are they going to start putting fireworks on drones? Well, here we are. There they are. Right in front of us, and it's beautiful.
I was kind of wondering what the aesthetic practical purpose would be, but now that I see it, I get it. I get it.
And yeah, I mean, just when you thought you couldn't make something hard or enough challenging, now you throw in the logistical nightmare of like the light of the pyrotechnics. It's just, I mean, the timing of that is that's pretty intense, you know, getting the drones up there. And then how do you kind of know when to time it? So it all must be triggered through the software, the ignition of the actual pyrotechnic.
One extra additional,
how crazy is that?
Or a couple additional steps added into that, that show.
Yeah, I wonder what the drones itself, like the ones with the pyrotechnics on it, actually look like. Because, I mean, I'm assuming they've had problems with overheating from the fireworks going off. Because obviously it produces heat. So I wonder how the drone deals with that. I wonder if it just has like a heat shield.
But it's weird. You know how you can hold the Roman candle? It's really like that. Like, you can hold a firework. The way that they're cased and everything, it's... you can encase this, and all it's doing is just it's like a firework, but it's kind of more like just a sparkler. Yeah. A sparkler.
Part of me wonders if Paul there's like a special patent.
You hold fireworks.
I'm kind of wondering like if there's a special patent or some kind of like
ducks, fireworks,
you know, like homemade looking type thing.
These were modified, like, no. But I did want to point out, it's pretty funny. You've got, right, a Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas-based company. Man, so much drone stuff in Dallas. Hmm. Fort Worth, Texas. But a Sky Elements drone shows has 6 Guinness World Records to its name, producing light shows across the United States. Really?
Would Red Bull get it done?
Yeah. Really just amazing stuff. There you go. Nice little still shot. At a drone event this week, I had a chance to bump into one of the folks that made the light show here in North Carolina happen. And big congratulations to them, the Air Vision. But it was exciting to be able to talk to someone who was there right in the thick of it. You know, I was sitting back just kind of going, you know, I was like, the darker it got, I was like, the less likely this is going to happen, because normally you'd want it to go right as the sun sets, because the darker it gets, the harder it is to figure stuff out. So it was exciting to talk to Scott and just get his take on everything.
Well, it's kind of crazy.
But drone light shows. What's going to happen next week? Drone.
Yeah. What's your guys' predictions for next week? Are we going to get
Samuel's going to tell us here.
Well, I was going to say I've been keeping
drone light shows that you shoot.
Been keeping a pulse on some of these drone light shows. Like you launch them out of a tube. That's apparently that they've been having. Like I've seen 2 pop up. One at the EDC in Las Vegas, I think Electronic Dance Concert, which is a huge event. They have drone shows there before with FPV to capture footage of the event, but now they're incorporating the drones into the show, which just happened. And then, you know, one of our first episodes, we were talking about how Universal, the theme park, was incorporating it. Walt Disney stepped up, and now they're doing drone shows at Florida's, what is that? They have one of the shopping centers they have in Florida, Orlando. Doing a drone show there as of May 15th, an article came out. And I'm just like, that is crazy. Like, that's 2, 3, 4 drone shows I'm hearing about within the last 2 weeks, which I don't know. A month ago, I've only heard of one happening every couple months.
No kidding.
I'm going to have to go see one eventually.
There's a real, let me share this link. There's
with
a,
all the upcoming ones.
Disney Dreams That Soar, new Disney Springs drone show. Holy cow.
I'm about to share this EDC article as well.
This was just yesterday. Like, they must have just done their first.
They heard Universal was doing it.
Let's see. Yeah, they were like, we're going to do it first.
They actually have some pretty solid animations, too.
I think that's what's really going to sell those shows is how cool it looks. Because that American Eagle with fire coming out.
Look at this.
Sparks coming out.
Look at this. This is at. What did I say?
Disney Springs.
Disney Springs. Because that's where they have all this space, right? Look, you put these drones over the water.
It's a giant little lake, pond. Yeah. Like, it's a nice area. And it's going to be even cooler with this drone show. That is so cool. We're seeing
this
Dumbo.
This just came out yesterday.
Is that Dumbo?
Flying through the clouds.
Yeah. Made of drones. That's crazy. I can't wait to see what we talk about next week with. Oh, nice. Yeah, the house from Up with balloons. That's so cool.
And see, it's all about having more drones that are ready to go in the background that are like almost already kind of lit in the sense to where.
That is insane.
As one image fades out. I'm not a fan of whatever that was.
I don't know what that's from.
Yeah, move next. Next. It's like the drone show. You're like, next. Yeah, I don't know what this is. A cat?
I think I need to brush up on my Disney. That's a
crazy looking cat. What was that? A hyena?
Oh, that might be God, what the is it the Lion King? I think that's from the
That
Lion
thing
King.
Looks rain that thing looks Why are they putting wings on special. And then we got one. The one that fell.
Oh, there we go.
Did that one break?
No, I think it was just kind of like setting you up for the
Wally.
Oh, look, it's Wally.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And Eve, right?
I wonder how, like, this is. Never I'm seen curious the movie. If this is a forced perspective or space. How it looks from other angles, you know?
Yeah, I think they probably had a viewing angle that you had to be in.
Well, it's a 3D. So it would look awkward from any.
Well, I'm just saying specifically, Paul. Like,
you'd see through it.
The drone show that we saw in North Carolina was basically mostly 2D, and this is incorporating more 3D elements to it to give it that depth and that distinctive look, I would say.
Yeah.
Right. But even the 2D show, if you were directly 90 degrees to a 2D show, all you would see is a line.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think this one's more dynamic than that.
See this guy's head. But like the Death Star, you could see it from back here, but it would look different because you would see through it.
It's weird because I don't think they have the backlights for it, you know?
That is so.
And they're cool. Shooting lasers off of the Death Star as it's rotating. Well, see,
and then notice how the light, and then look how the lights just appear on the edge.
Right.
Like they're actually disappearing on this edge and they're appearing on this edge. And then the Wally was like full 360, right?
Because it was rotating.
And this is a 14-minute video, so that's pretty impressive. Like,
oh wow,
we got to share this.
We're about to get the Michelin Man.
Is that the Big Hero 6? This up.
Big Hero. And then it's like it'll be like to be continued.
Wow. Oh,
that's crazy. Wow. I just had to skip ahead. See, now it's like I was saying, like a wall. Like you could make it like a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like next week we're going to be like, oh, did you see they put 4,000 drones up and they made a TV screen with drones? Like that's what we'll be talking about next week maybe. And this guy's hair. Buzz Lightyear. And then it just turned into Buzz Lightyear like so fast. Anyway, yeah, how neat. Look at that. Dreams That Soar.
I don't know if you want to do
it. So this is what they're calling this show, Dreams That Soar.
I don't know if you want to do it right now, but check out that EDC link when you can for some really cool photos up close of the drones.
Drone Stories Crew. Oh, this is the thing I saw too. Is just like the so lines good. That they've done with the drones at the Formula cars. Like it's because it's not one drone. They just have a bunch of drones lined up, and they're just moving the light. Like they're moving the light, and it they looks like it's moving fast.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, our drone shows Burning Man. Oh, so these are all past.
The mental hospital.
What's that?
I said I hope they didn't send anybody to the mental hospital.
Oh my God.
See, we don't fly drones. We fly dynamic pixels.
Huh.
We all know what happens at EDC. I don't need to say
except
it.
Clearly the color file is not.
And Terry makes a good point there.
What?
Just.
What?
Not everyone's going to be completely sober when they're seeing that at EDC, so they probably have some wild reactions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is why it's getting integrated here first.
Yeah.
Look, they even did the Disney Plus logo in there. Did you see that? That is crazy. Well. Well, that was awesome. check that out. Disney Stories. What was it? What was that?
It looked like they had the company name behind it too. Just Google
Disney drones.
Disney Dreams
go, Store. Go, but we're Universal, right? But we want Universal first.
I love some of the Universal properties, yeah. But also that drone show looks so cool. So
some of the Universal properties. Let's not talk about Terry's shirt. We managed to go through the whole episode without mentioning shirts. Terry's repping. It's all right. Jurassic Park, Jordan, Modella. Yeah, we're a diverse clothing repping group. So everybody, thank you. Drone Light Show's certainly taking over and drones as a first responders. Drones that light up, drones that store themselves in boxes, and drones that go as fast as Max Verstappen. That's what this week's episode was all about. We touched on the FAA Reauthorization Act. Talked about the world's fastest camera drone, the Red Bull Drone 1. Talked a little about eVTOL and the Port San Antonio and what they're doing out there in order to maybe move people around the work campus a little bit quicker and get themselves set up for the future of pilotless air taxis. And then spent a little bit of time watching some really neat drone show videos. Shout out Sky Elements out of Texas with their pyrotechnic light show drones. We look forward to getting your questions across the various platforms. Hope to dive in to answer some of those in next week's episode. Again, happy Memorial Day, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you very much for supporting dronelife.com and checking in regularly for all of your news, insights, and industry happenings. We look forward to connecting with everybody next week and on next episode of Weekly Wings. Have a great rest of your day, morning, day, or evening. Thank you, everybody. See you on the next episode.
See you.
Fly safe. See you next week.